Holiday has a new pizza you can't refuse at a price you won't believe. Introducing Godfather's Barbecue Bacon Cheeseburger Pizza for just $2.99 with barbecue sauce, bacon, beef, and diced onion topped with melted mozzarella and provolone cheese. It's a pizza you can't refuse at a price you won't believe. Try new Godfather's Barbecue Bacon Cheeseburger Pizza or choose Godfather's Breakfast, Pepperoni, or 3-Meat Pizza, all only $2.99, only for a limited time and only at Holiday.
Welcome back. Mike Max, News Talk 830 WCCO. You know, we're talking about getting outdoors and all those things. This is also the time of the year. Many of you are going to go fishing or exploring or to your cabin or to the lake or to wherever it is. And I don't want to call this an epidemic. Maybe it's just because I've heard so much about it lately. But Lyme's disease, when you see what it does to people, when you see it firsthand, I had no idea how much damage it does. And, you know, frequently I have on my good friend Pete Najarian comes in here and we talk about things and sports and financials and all those things. But by extension, I've had a chance to meet his wife, Lisa, who is afflicted with Lyme's disease, has been for many years, had it misdiagnosed for many years. And now she's a leader with a cause and a mission. And I just can't tell, I can't caution people enough. After seeing Lisa, what you've gone through, there's someone in my extended family that has it. I don't know how many people I know that have had Lyme disease. I had no idea the depth and what it can do and how it affects everybody differently. So thank you for joining us, first of all.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. I mean, start with, because you were misdiagnosed for what, 10 years?
16.
16 years. So for 16 years, this was going on in your system and nobody could figure it out, huh?
Right. Yep. I had different, I had a myriad of symptoms that we thought were other things. We couldn't, it was really difficult to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. So it started out with hearing loss. So I went to an ENT and then I had heart issues. I still have all of these issues. Have heart issues. So we went to a cardiologist. Very arthritic hands. So I went to a rheumatologist. So every time I went somewhere, they would always say, well, you're healthy as a horse. I would do a stress test for my heart. Oh, no, you're in great shape. Nothing's wrong with your heart. We don't see anything with an echocardiogram or an x-ray or anything like that. And so we were puzzled for all these years, and it was fatiguing and very costly. That's the very hard part about this, is that it's so costly because Lyme disease and its issues are not covered by insurance. So, yeah, it went on forever, and it seems that we all know somebody who has Lyme disease, or they have these symptoms and don't know that they have Lyme disease, and they're trying to figure out what the heck is wrong with them.
Yeah, I know somebody, they said, the problem is, 3 out of 4 weeks, I'm fine, but I don't know what week of the month I'm going to feel just awful. And so it's hard for me to maintain a job because every month I'm going to have a week or a few days where I'm going to feel horrible, and I have no idea when it's going to happen.
Right. It's a horrible part about Lyme disease, is that it's so debilitating. I was just speaking with somebody today who said that a friend of theirs had to take an entire year off of work. Well, yep. How do you do that?
That's right. Good luck with that. Yeah.
Right. If you are a mom or a dad and you've got kids and you've got to take time off of work and your job doesn't understand and you can't prove that you have anything, you don't know how to fix it, what do you do?
If you see the target or the bullseye, which indicates, you know, can be the first indication, if you get to it quickly, does it make a big difference in how they treat it? Or once you have it, does that not matter?
No, absolutely. The quicker you can get in and get on antibiotics, the better chance of getting rid of it you have. Although this is part of what our foundation does, Twin Cities Lyme Foundation. We get people to Lyme literate practitioners. So, Mike, let's say you are out hunting or fishing like you typically do, and the next day you see a bullseye rash, which is a definite indication of Lyme disease. You go in to your doctor and they give you 2 weeks of antibiotics because it's your internist that you've been seeing for the past 25 years. He knows you inside and out. And he says, well, this is the standard protocol for Lyme disease. It's not the standard protocol. as proven by Lyme literate experts, people who were trained by ILADS, it's International Lyme and Diseases Association. So when you just go to your health clinic on the corner, or you go into the emergency room, or you go to your general practitioner, they're probably going to do 2 weeks of antibiotics. You really, really do need to be on antibiotics for at least 6 weeks.
Really?
To eradicate Lyme disease, whatever you've got in you. I mean, nothing is, well, I shouldn't say nothing's going to help me. That's pretty pessimistic. I'm not going to be that much of a Debbie Downer, but I've had it so long. It's so embedded in my system, and it's grown for so long that I've come to a point where I embrace it and I say, I'm not going to let it control me, because on any given day, I have a ton of symptoms. I have 60 symptoms that I could write down on a sheet of paper that I've had for the past, now I've had it 20 years. So it's really, really important to get to a Lyme literate practitioner. That's what our foundation does, is our mission is to not only create awareness, but also to get you to a Lyme literate practitioner so that you can get the proper help that you need. Because Lyme disease is such a convoluted disease. It's so misunderstood. People are so unaware. We in Minnesota are the second hotspot in the nation for Lyme disease. And I would wager a bet that not many people know that here in the Twin Cities. That's why we started the foundation.
If you get it, I mean, does everybody react differently? Is that why it's so difficult to diagnose?
Yep. Everybody has a different genotype, right? So that's one thing. The second thing is that ticks don't only carry Lyme disease. They also carry something that we call co-infections. There's a ton of them out there. Babesia, babesiosis, Bartonella, they're tick-borne illnesses, but they are not Lyme disease. So you can have any combination. I'm not really quite sure how many co-infections there are exactly, but you can have any combination of a co-infection and Lyme disease. So, for instance, I have Bartonella and Lyme disease, and you might have something completely different. You might have Lyme disease and Babesia. So it manifests differently with you, also because you have a completely different genotype than I do. So that's why it's so difficult to diagnose. And I use this everywhere. Cancer looks like cancer under a microscope. Lyme disease is called the great imitator for a reason, because under a microscope, it looks like different diseases. It can look like fibromyalgia, it can look like ALS, it can look like Parkinson's disease, it can look like syphilis. Hmm. It takes on the characteristics of all these different diseases. So it's part of the reason why insurance companies are shying away from paying, because how do we really know that you don't have multiple sclerosis, which is also a very big one? I would say that, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not a clinician, so I can't speak as if I'm educated. I just know what I read. I know the meetings that I go to. So many people that have multiple sclerosis are people that have probably been diagnosed. So that's something that you really should check if your MS is something that you or you have symptoms of MS and have been diagnosed. You really should take a look at Lyme disease and see if that might be something that you have. But yeah, to answer your question, there are no two people alike that have Lyme disease. Everybody looks different. It is the problem with the insurance companies and doctors and the public, is that we don't know definitively. Sometimes many people don't know definitively exactly what it is that they have because of the symptoms that they have.
You keep on doing this great work because you've enlightened a lot of us. And give us the website.
Well, I appreciate it. It's TwinCitiesLyme.org. We have been up and running for almost a year. We have a gala each year. Last year, we had Don Felder play at our gala. It was very small, intimate setting at the Fine Line. Very successful. We're going to do that again. We will be on CCO, or WCCO, telling everybody about the up-and-coming gala that's going to be coming up in the fall. But we appreciate that. We've helped a bunch of people get to the doctor that we use with our foundation, who is a great doctor who's trying to help people. But the problem with anything is that everything comes at a price, and we don't have super deep pockets. We just take in donations and try to help people as we have enough money to fund for. So
you keep up the good work, and we'll stay in touch with you on this, okay?
All right, Maxie, thanks so much.
You bet. Lisa Nigerian, and it is, and I didn't even get to the part about what it does to people mentally and emotionally. That's another topic for another time, but I can only do so much downer stuff in one show. Notre Dame Cathedral burns, obviously. What would be the equivalent of that in the U.S.? Do we have anything that's a structure that would bring about that much emotion? We'll talk about it when we come back. 651-989-9226 if you have an opinion on that, or you can text us anytime at 81807. Mike Max in for Chad Hartman, News Talk 830 WCCO. So the Cathedral of Notre Dame burns. They'll save a lot of it, and it brings out great emotion for people, in part because of their faith, for sure, but what it represents to them. And I start to think, what in the U.S. would be akin to that? What would we have here that, if it burned, would bring about such emotion? It's really a two-pronged process. It's that you're able to observe this in front of your eyes, like the Titanic going down. You know, you can see it, and you can't do anything about it. And by the way, did you know, Shaletta, that if you take the movie The Titanic and you go to the end and you run it backwards,
uh-huh,
it becomes a very uplifting movie. Gives you great hope. It's about these people that get saved by their...
And that band is playing the violin.
And at the end, the band's playing, and they go back to port, and everybody goes back, and everybody's happy.
A good time.
But what would what would be akin to that here in the U.S.? And I can't think of a there's the Crystal Cathedral where Robert Schuller preached, and you know, Joel Osteen preaches at the Compaq Center they took over, which was a basketball arena one time in Houston. There are things like that. But I can't think of anything in the U.S. from a faith-based standpoint that would have the same connotation, the same measurement, the same, you know, well, it's both a place of worship and it's a place where people come just to marvel. Is there a place that you can think of?
Yeah, the church in New Orleans, Jackson's, it's a church in New Orleans in Jackson Square, where people come and they take tours. I'm going to have to Google it, but you know the church I'm talking about.
I know of what it is, but I don't know that it has the same international kind of, you know,
no,
when you say the only thing I could think of, and this isn't religious based, is the White House.
Yeah.
Because the White House, mm-hmm, is a symbol to us of where a president, whoever it is, oversees democracy and freedom. And it's been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a symbol. Like it or not like, you like or don't like the president that sits in there, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It is a symbol to us of what we are about. It is a symbol to me of freedom. That we have the right to put anybody in that office that we feel fit, and we can do that. If we don't like who's in office, we can campaign for somebody else. And we have to accept whoever's in office, right? But that is what the White House represents to me. And if that burned, thinking of all the presidents that have served there and all the decisions that have been made there, that would resonate with me. But I can't think of anything else that is like that. Let's go to Neil in St. Paul. Neil, what do you think?
This is just locally, because I've been there. I think the St. Paul Cathedral is pretty amazing.
Oh, I think it is amazing. But I don't think that even, you know, yeah, in St. Paul and in Minnesota, but I don't think that resonates internationally.
Oh, yeah, right. No, exactly. Yeah, it's internationally. And that one Notre Dame is just monstrous, I guess.
Yeah.
800 years old of history.
Yeah, well, we can't top that even if we want to, right?
No, we're only like 150 years, I think, the cathedral. So
yeah, 800 years ago, what we had, you know, a couple cavemen, I don't know. Might be some cave that the dinosaurs looked in would be the most. But now, we haven't been here long enough to change that, you know?
Yeah, you're right. No power tools back then, I'll tell you that.
No power tools. No, just better have a good strong branch when those dinosaurs come, right?
Yeah. Yeah, how they lift you up to the top there.
Like the Flintstones. Thank you. Yep.
You know, Mike, I just looked it up. It's St. Louis Cathedral in Jackson Square in New Orleans. It was opened in 1794.
So not long after we were a country. Yeah. If you go to Harvard Square in Boston, there's a cemetery, and people that have been there know of what I speak. It's on the campus, and you start to look at the tombstones, and you realize these are people that died before we were a country. So they had I don't know if Harvard, the college, was in place yet, but in Harvard Square, there's a cemetery there, and you're talking about people whose headstones, and then you go, my gosh, this person's been dead a long time. But no, it was before we even formed as a country, and you go, whoa, that's pretty serious stuff. Let's go to Connie in Wayzata. Connie, you're on.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Connie.
I think perhaps the National Cathedral in D.C. might rank in there.
Yeah, I just don't, you know, when you say Notre Dame Cathedral, you think of an image and boom, it's right there. And if you're going to Paris, you're going to go there. I don't know that you'd do that in D.C., you know?
Well, we don't have much else. It's 850 years old around here.
We just don't. I don't know that we can compete on that front. We can beat them in a lot of things, especially France. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We'll kick their ass in just about everything they want to bring our way. But we can't compete in older structures.
True enough.
Yeah, I'd rather have it our way, though. I'd rather be new and be the best kids on the block. Jay Robinson.
I'm not so sure.
Thank you. Jay Robinson is a Hall of Fame wrestling coach, and we were having breakfast today. And he was telling me the story about the person that most influenced him. And he said, it just took 4 months of working for this one person in the military. And I said, you got to tell that story on the radio, because I think a lot of us, when we decide what a good boss or a good coach looks like, we don't necessarily look at it the right way. The right way is, who does the most long-term good for me? It's not, did they make me feel good that day? Did they make me feel comfortable that day? It's who gave me the best advice that helped me the most in the long run? And he had a good story to tell about that. The Hall of Famer will join us next. Welcome back. Mike Maxson for Chad Hartman, News Talk 830 WCCO. Had breakfast, early morning breakfast this morning, and it was worth it because I was with two people that will be on my show here today because they're such applicable guests. General Nash, Richard Nash, who's well-known in these circles and is going to talk about a panel discussion they had last night as it pertained to the Vietnam War. And Jay Robinson, the retired and Hall of Fame wrestling coach and one of my favorite people of all time. He is a Hall of Famer. Anybody that knows Jay knows. You hang around with him a little bit, you get some words of wisdom, plus you can have some fun with him at the same time. And anyway, Jay was telling me a story, and it kind of pertains to all of us go through life, and we work for different people and with different people, and what do you look for in somebody that you think is the definition of a good boss? And Jay, I bring you into the conversation. Now, first of all, good to see you.
Yeah, it was great seeing you, Mike.
That was fun. That was fun. We'll do that again soon. But you were telling a story about somebody that taught you more in 4 months than most can in 4 years. I started listening to it. I was just fascinated by it. Explain the scenario and what you got out of it and how it changed the way you think about leadership and what you should look for.
Well, my parents, real quick, my parents taught me that there's a lot of places that you can learn different lessons, okay? And so different people will teach you different things. My high school coach taught me that don't be afraid to make a decision or to try. My college coach taught me, as far as wrestling, that you have to have a philosophy, which then morphed into Major Yuswa, who I worked for, who was the first person I worked for as a second lieutenant in the United States Army. And I was a small arms committee. I ran the small arms committee where we taught people how to shoot 45 caliber machine guns, M16s, 72 rocket launchers and grenade launchers. And so I worked for this man, and he came up through the ranks. He was like an E6 or E7, and then he went to what's called OCS, Officer Training School, and then he became an officer, and then he came up through the ranks. So he came up the hard way, and he was a very hard, crusty old guy to work for. He's one of those guys that gets you scared, okay, or intimidated a little bit. Mm-hmm. But he always used to teach me two things. He told me two things that that stuck with me in those moments. He says, number one, he says, if I don't do anything, Lieutenant, I'm going to teach you how to think. And he made me always look at something from the why. Is that when I went in and told him something that I couldn't do or we couldn't do, he would always puff on his corncob pipe and then say, have you tried this?
Mm-hmm.
And it was
so he was always thinking of another option.
Another option, okay? And then he clarified that option by saying this. He says, Lieutenant, if I don't do anything else, I'm going to teach you how to take your blinders off. And then he held his hands up to each side of his head, and he goes, most people look at the world this way. And he goes, if you ever see a horse going down the street, and they keep blinders on him so they can only look ahead, right? He says, I'm going to take your blinders off, and you're going to see 90% more than most people will ever see. And in the future, when I went to see him, every option I would think, okay, we can't do this, we can't do this, we can't do this, we can't do this. And he made me learn to look at every situation, not from my perspective, but a whole bunch of different perspectives, which then I started noticing things and seeing things. And it's not, doesn't make you a better person. You just are more aware of what's going on, and you have way more opportunities and options.
So, for example, with your coaching, you may see an athlete that you recruited or didn't recruit, and you may stop and say, well, because I have a stereotype of what a 132-pounder should be, I'm not going to go after that guy. And upon further review, if you take the blinders off, you go, wait a second, I got to think about that. This person brings something to the table that I didn't see before.
Yeah, that's exactly right, is that most people go after – everybody's after the great athlete. I mean, that's who everybody wants to recruit.
Or in business, the great salesperson, whatever, right?
Yeah, it's the same thing, you know. And it's like, there's nothing, but on the other hand, there's nothing more common than unsuccessful men with talent. So as a result of taking my blinders off, I saw that if you could get coachable kids that would actually listen to you and do what you told them to do, right, that you could outwork the good guys, right, mm-hmm. the majority of the time. And
so now you're looking at it differently. You're not just looking for talent.
Right. You're right. There's a certain level of talent they have to be, but the work ethic becomes more important. So by taking your blinders off, instead of seeing just those limited number of great talent, you know, I mean, hypothetically, you're looking at A people, so you got less than 10% of the people to look at. Now you can look at the B's and the C pluses, and by them taking their blinders off, okay, you can move them from C to B and from B to A, and then you have more options.
So his whole idea with you was just to get you to look at a bigger world and to think and to solve problems on your own by saying, have I really considered all the options, and keep asking yourself those questions.
Right, and the options, okay, are you have to be able to look. I mean, that goes to the blinders, is that the options are, is when you take them off, you see all this other area, all right, that you can work in now. So it gives you a different way to go about it. But most people are so focused on, right, they're so focused. It's like, you know, there's an old saying, and it says, you know, when you put stress on people like, and they use this, is that, Mike, you're going to die. You're going to have to die. Which way do you want to die? Okay, you got to pick it. Like, what would you pick right
now? Yeah, bullet to the head, a knife to the back, right?
Yeah. Well, that's what you would pick, but I would pick old age. See, and the point being is that when you put stress on people, they narrow their focus, okay? So their blinders are on them. So what you're trying to do in stressful situations is teach them is that, hey, guys, we have all these other options. We can die of old age. Mm-hmm. And it works that way. And you get, the more you practice it, the better you get at it. Is that when stress comes along, with most people, they narrow their focus and they cut out all kinds of their options.
So last, when somebody goes through your program or your summer camp, what is it that you want to unveil to them that they didn't have coming in that they will take with them the rest of their life?
That you can function during stress. If you can function during stress, all right, stress is the great equalizer in life. Okay, if you get somebody really good, really stressed, they'll make mistakes, and they'll make a lot of mistakes. Most people do, because they don't live in that world. if you learn the world, if you learn to live in that world, right, and the word is, and it goes even to Ranger School, is the ability to function, okay, when things get hard. So instead of looking at it as a bad situation, all right, you take your blinders off and you say, hey, this gives me a huge advantage over everybody else because they are going to make mistakes because they're not used to being here, and I can function this way. And so by taking those blinders off and learning that, those skills, you give yourself a one-up in a whole lot of different situations.
Good stuff as always, sir. We got to get you in the studio again soon, but love being with you again this morning. You're the best.
Yeah, it was great. Good. You take care, Mike.
Always good to visit with Jay Robinson, one of my all-time favorites. I've said this before on this show, but I've learned so many things from him over the years that you just go in there and sit down and you get the world according to Jay. But he's thought about so many different things that many people haven't thought about yet. And one of his commandments, if you will, is you can outwork 90% of your opponents. You can outwork 90% of your opponents. You can be better than your opponents by outworking them, 90% of them. And ultimately, what that does and what some people don't want to hear is that it puts you in control because you're just asking this one question, right? Am I willing to outwork my opponents? Am I willing to work more than them? Because what he's saying is if you should be in the top 10% of your class or your business, whatever it is, because you're going to make the decision as to how hard you're going to work. And so it puts in your control to focus on what it is you can control. And what he's saying is you can get to the top 10% just with the decision that you make how to outwork your opponents. And that was one of Jay's criteria, one of the things that he lived by. And then we were talking this morning about learning that the most talented don't always end up being the best. Sometimes one of the great, what you think is the great gift becomes the great curse. And that is the people that get a great deal of talent, natural ability, early in their lives. Because what happens is, they're so good that they can win without working for a while. And the person that's the worker, the person that's the grinder, the person that keeps coming back every day and wanting more, and they're not the best, and they're never, and they keep on, they never think they're going to be as good as this person with talent. When they finally overtake that person with talent doesn't know what to do next because they have no plan B. They've simply relied on the gifts. But the grinder has relied on the work ethic. And now he or she is not going to quit. They're just going to keep going. And the person with the talent is stuck there. The person that grew to be big and tall in seventh grade and is no longer big and tall in 10th grade doesn't have a plan B because all they did was relied on their big arms and their big legs to get them through whatever it was. And the same is true in business and broadcasting and in life. That's why I love reporting. Because reporting is a game about, you know, anybody could be a great reporter. Anybody. What are you willing to do to get the story? What are you willing to do to get the good stories? How hard are you willing to work to build up a network that then you can compete every day? So that you get complete control over this. You get complete control over it. Now, how hard are you choosing to work? And that's Jay Robinson's philosophy in life. How hard are you willing to work? Because you will be successful if you work really hard. So now look in the mirror. How hard are you willing to work? There's a pretty good chance that you're not getting screwed in this world. There's a pretty good chance that you're not working hard enough. And that's why he became a Hall of Fame coach without question and ran the camps in the summer and build a monument for him. He had those things philosophically. He believed in them, but he lived them every day. I mean, the guy coached a season. He didn't have a knee. I don't mean his knee was hurt. I mean, they took his knee out. He didn't have a knee, nothing. Because they're afraid of infection, so they just took the whole thing out and they had to let it heal before they could go in and do a knee replacement. He didn't have a knee. So he just walked with a cane. And he coached. And they won. Think about that. He could have gone on disability. He could have done whatever. Nope. Instead, he went to practice. Coached his team. And he was probably 65, 66 years old at the time. So we all get to make that choice. The question is, what choice do you make? And if you have control over it, why wouldn't you choose to work hard? Because I would guarantee you, if I was king of the world, the first thing I'd want to clean up is I'd say, okay, in the United States of America, if we want to be a great country, now you're never going to be able to have power over this, but I'd say, how many of you people are using all your sick days, and how many of you are really sick when you're using your sick days? Only you can answer that question. Okay? How many of you look at sick days as vacation days? Don't have to answer it out loud. Just think about it. Because first of all, we got to get you off your butts. And we got to get you. You're a resource for us, right? You've got talent. You've got things you can bring to the table. But you can't do that if you're faking like you're sick. So let's start there. Let's do the math on that. How many millions of days do we get back? How many millions of days of brain power do we get back pumped back into this country? Let's start there. Then let's ask you, how hard are you willing to work when nobody's around? Let's go there. Will you work hard when nobody's watching? Are you talking about how hard you work, or are you working hard? Let's go there. We could solve a lot of our problems. And that's bipartisan, folks. That doesn't have anything to do with who's in office. We could solve a lot of our problems by simply focusing on what we can control, and that's our work ethic. Boom. We'll be the best in the world, for sure. All we got to do is focus on our work ethic, not pretend that somebody else owes us something and that we're getting screwed over all the time. We'll be just fine. That's it. Just understand you get responsibility for your life. Do something about it. Don't wait for the government to do it for you. Don't wait for anybody to do it for you. Just go do it. Instead of pretending it's somebody else's problem or somebody else's fault why you didn't get your lot in life. And that's Jay Robinson's theory in life. He has no business being a Hall of Fame wrestling coach, except that he outworked everybody. Sid Hartman has no business being the greatest reporter ever in the country. News, weather, or sports, greatest ever. Didn't graduate from high school. What did he do? He outworked everybody. The Lindis construction time is 150. Time to lower your energy bills with a free home energy audit. Welcome back. Mike Max in for Chad Hartman, News Talk 830 WCCO. The Wild in the city of Minneapolis announced a lease extension for Xcel Energy Center that will go through 2035. Craig Leopold, the owner, and Melvin Carter, the mayor, came together for that. And, I mean, it's a good proactive, why not, right? I mean, get the lease done. For those of you that didn't live through this, I've lived through so many of these. Well, the lease is coming up on the Metrodome, and they need to make a decision because the Vikings or the Twins or the whoever – could be out of here after that. The Met Center, the lease is coming up, and the North Stars can buy their way out. So these things are significant because you do have and I haven't heard a lot of – you know, you haven't heard much about teams moving for a long time, have we? I mean, not just here but in any market. There's no way you can move from here. We got every stadium possibly afforded to mankind. We've got a soccer stadium now that's going to rock this summer, rock the other day. We got Target Field. We got Target Center remodeled. Xcel Energy Center will be next, I would think, and maybe that's one of the things that Craig and he discussed. I didn't see the details of their what their press conference was about. The St. Paul Saints have a beautiful stadium. Everybody's got a beautiful stadium now. In Los Angeles, they play three teams playing at the Staples Center, the Clippers, the Lakers, and the Kings hockey team. Think about that in L.A. Here, Wild have their own arena. University of Minnesota has its own arena. Timberwolves have their own arena. we are lucky. We are lucky. We're lucky to have, for the instance, Allianz Field, which rocked the other day, private funding, $200 million. Private funding. Didn't have to come to the masses to get the money. That's pretty cool that we live in a city that does things like that and that creates a lifestyle or whatever you want to call it. Somebody even told me, Shalette, I don't know if this is true or not, but somebody is trying to tell me we have theaters downtown.
Just a couple of them.
What do we have?
We've got the Orpheum. We've got the Ordway in St. Paul. We've got tons of theaters.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, where are they?
They're downtown Minneapolis. They're downtown St. Paul. They're all over the place.
Oh, so more than one city has them.
More than one city. Yes, we've got the Chan Hessen Dinner Theater.
What do they do? I mean, is that like live performances or is it like a movie theater or what is it?
Shows. you know, concerts a lot of times.
Oh, concerts
yeah.
too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do they do like musicals, like Sound of Music?
Of
like
course. Mamma Mia and all kinds of cool stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Are you kidding me?
Well, somebody's telling me, is there one called the Goosetree?
Goosetree.
Goosetree? Guthrie?
Guthrie, yeah. That little old place.
What do they have? What kind of stuff do they have there?
They've got live plays. They've got concerts. They've got shows. They've got camps for kids. They've got all kinds of cool stuff.
Huh.
Yeah, you didn't.
Can you just go
there
in any time or what?
Well, you know, you got to buy a ticket. You can't just walk in.
But like, I got a press pass. Would that work at those? Like
you
I have some press
VIP.
Passes for.
Yeah.
Would that qualify? Or could I get one for that?
Yeah, I think you've been in town long enough doing this whole press media thing. I think.
But do they shoot you one? Is it the same thing? Because
yeah.
I don't have any. No, I don't go to any games. So I don't have a press pass.
Oh yeah, you've got to get that. You can't just go in.
So you think I could call people the Guthrie? Or,
and they would hook you up.
Really?
I believe they would.
For any, just I could just show up anytime.
Well,
do they have a press box? Well, we'll talk about this during the break. Mike Max with Chad Hartman, WCCO.